Hello, this is Doug Brown, and we are on Unusual Sources, 93.3 FM, broadcasting out of McMaster University. You can be heard also online at cfmu.ca. And I'm joining Brendan Stone today, and we're going to begin the show looking at the issue of Kashmir. A terrible situation, a terribly long period of unrest, conflict, injustice, brutality, and you know, this is all started with the independence of India and the partition of India and Pakistan way back in 1947. So you know, the corporate media really tells us hardly anything about what's going on. We fortunately have, through our show and the Taylor Report, we've had a number of good discussions with Phil Taylor interviewing Bashar Bangash, or Zafar Bangash. Zafar has worked tirelessly on the Kashmir issue. And so right here in Hamilton, we've had some activity. In fact, our very own Ken Stone, community activist, activists for the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and other good causes. Ken last year went to Pakistan, then went to Azad Kashmir, the part that's controlled by Pakistan, and was at a conference and saw a lot of what was going on. But more than that, just, you know, personal observations. There's been just released a report, a UN report on the situation. So we're going to have a look at that. Ken's joined us in the studio. Welcome, Ken.
Hi, Doug.
Okay, well, it's great to have you on. And Ken, you know, you and I, well, even for you and I, you know, the start of the issue in Kashmir, I was a preschooler at the time, and you might not have even been born. But can you give us a little bit of background on Kashmir and you know, how we've arrived at this situation to date?
I'll do my best, Doug. You're right to say that the problem started way back in 1947 with the British partition of the Indian subcontinent into two countries, India and Pakistan. And at that time, the idea was that predominantly Muslim states would go with Pakistan, and predominantly Hindu states would go with India. Now, in the north, there is a large state called, it was a princely state called Jammu and Kashmir, and it was overwhelmingly Muslim. And the ruler, the prince, happened to be Hindu. And at first, he decided he wanted to be independent. And so he never consulted, of course, his own population, which was overwhelmingly Muslim, as I said. And immediately, the Muslim population started to become active, organize, demonstrate, and take up arms because they wanted to join Pakistan. And when this happened, the prince got cold feet, and he called on India to help him out, to save his bacon, and he wanted to join India. So the Indian army, the Indian government sent in the Indian army, and there were terrible massacres of Muslim civilians. Nobody even knows how many tens of thousands were martyred at the time. And in the fighting, the Muslim forces, supported by the new government of Pakistan, was gaining the upper hand, and the Indian government thought that they were going to lose the whole thing. So they appealed to the new United Nations organization. And they went to the Security Council and asked for this, the help of the Security Council in resolving this situation. So it was India who went to the Security Council. And it just so happened that at that time, Canada was a member of the UN Security Council. In fact, the president of the Security Council was General Macnaughton, who was a hero of World War II. And he took a personal interest in this issue, and he helped to work out what was a very democratic solution, and a very simple solution, which was to give a vote to the people of Jammu and Kashmir on their political future. It was called an impartial political plebiscite, or what we would call today a referendum. And the United Nations Security Council, you know, passed a number of resolutions in early 1948, and they all centered around this one idea: give the people of Jammu and Kashmir a referendum on their political future. And the Indian government, of the Pakistani government, immediately accepted that. And the Indian government also accepted it and said that they would implement it as soon as there were peaceful conditions prevailing. And so what happened was the Indian government never followed through on this promise. And there has never been a referendum. So Jammu and Kashmir have been divided along what's called the line of control, which was the armistice line, 1948. On one side, the western side, the Pakistani government is in charge. It's called Azad Kashmir, or Free Kashmir. And on the other side is Indian-occupied Kashmir, which is the two-thirds of the territory. And on that side, there has been an occupation that has been going on for 71 years. Almost, it's a little bit longer than the occupation of Palestine by the Zionist regime. And it is, in every case, as repressive or even more repressive than the regime, the Zionist regime has been to the Palestinians. In those 71 years, the Indian government has tried to intensify its hold on Jammu and Kashmir. They have brought in what is now amounts to an army of 1 million in occupation, 700,000 troops, and about 200,000 or 300,000 police are situated in Kashmir and have been there for decades. So there are about, I can't remember if it's 13 million or 16 million people who live in the Indian-occupied Kashmir, and 1 million occupation troops. The bulk of the Indian army is in Kashmir. You can imagine the cost in terms of finances for the Indian government. But on top of that, there is a catastrophic human rights situation that prevails in Kashmir, Indian-occupied Kashmir, which includes, since 1989, over 100,000 Kashmiris who have been killed by the Indian government. There have been tens of thousands of people who have disappeared, no trace, but there have been mass graves recently found. There have been thousands of people who are in jails, including children. There has been a campaign of mass rapes against women in Indian-occupied Kashmir, over 11,000 cases documented. And for all these huge crimes against humanity, war crimes, there has not been one single Indian soldier or police officer who has ever been prosecuted for any of these crimes. So we have a terrible, probably one of the worst human rights situations on the entire planet, and you know, nobody knows about it over here in the Western world. No, it's not covered in the media. The Canadian government hasn't said a word about it in decades. So we in the peace movement, we have decided to pick up this cause. And we have also done this because of a situation which is important to the peace movement, and that is the fact that, counting the partition, there have now been three wars between India and Pakistan over Kashmir. First during the partition, 47-48, and then twice afterwards. And in those last two wars, 27,150 combatants were killed and hundreds of thousands were injured. Today, along the line of control, according to the High Commissioner's report, one of the points in the High Commissioner's report, one of his major points, in fact, his very first point, is that since July of 2016, and especially since January of this year, there have been sharp rises in the number of ceasefire violations along the line of control, which means that there are skirmishes, you know, artillery duels along the line of control, which could easily flare up into another war. But the situation today is different than it has been in the past. Both India and Pakistan have nuclear weapons, and lots of them, hundreds of them each. Pakistan has gone to the point that it has given over to its generals in the field the control of tactical nuclear weapons. Now, these sound like small weapons, not going to cause much damage, but many of these weapons have the potential of 10, 20, 50, 100 times what was dropped by the U.S. on Hiroshima and Nagasaki 70 years ago. And moreover, 73 years ago, and moreover, the Indian government has, scores of planes, ships, and missile sites from which to launch its nuclear weapons against Pakistan. So if there were a war in which even only a few of these weapons were used, the future of humanity, the future of civilization would be very much in doubt. The natural environment would be made uninhabitable for the world. So this is an issue of world peace, and that's why the peace movement, in this case, the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, that's why we support the Friends of Kashmir, and we support the call for peace in Kashmir through the implementation of the UN resolutions of 70 years ago. There's no need for a new formula for peace. If only the countries of the world, if only the United Nations would impose on India today the demand that you need to hold a referendum, you need to pull out your troops, and you need to have a referendum among the people of Jammu and Kashmir. Let them decide their future, India or Pakistan. Let's get this festering sore resolved, and let's reduce the chance of Armageddon.
Right. Very serious situation. I mean, the current human rights situation in occupied Kashmir should warrant worldwide attention. But the potential of a nuclear war between India and Pakistan, this is of such grave consequence. Surely Canada and other countries have a stake in this, and we should really be doing all we can as a country to resolve the situation. And as you mentioned, the solutions have been sitting in front of us since 1948.
Absolutely,
hold a referendum. We are a democratic country. We profess to believe in democracy. Let democracy play out. Well. Some interesting developments locally. The president of Azad Kashmir, the part of Kashmir that's under Pakistan control, is in Canada, and he has made a few appearances. One very locally, one in Hamilton just on Sunday. You spoke at that one. I was in the audience, and can you tell us a little bit about the visit and what impact you're hoping this will have?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. The president of Azad Kashmir his name is Masood Khan. He's a career diplomat. He was elected president of Azad Kashmir. That's the part that's in Pakistan, as you mentioned, 2 years ago. I met him personally last year, January of 2017. There was a conference held in Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan. It was organized by the Young Parliamentarians of India. Those are all the parliamentarians of all parties under 40 years old. And they had a conference on Kashmir. And they invited parliamentarians from the UK and from the European Union, and they invited peace activists such as myself and Muslim scholars such as Zafar Bangash, and they had hundreds of young Pakistani activists and students in attendance, and the media, of course. And in the course of that conference, the president of Azad Kashmir invited us, all the delegates, to a media conference in his residence in Islamabad. And so the media from all over South Asia was there. And we talked about why Kashmiris need a referendum. And following that media conference, President Khan arranged for some of us delegates to go and visit Azad Kashmir following the conference, and I was one of the lucky ones who got to go. So we went to Azad Kashmir, and we were surprised, to say the least, about how interested the people in Azad Kashmir are in the situation on the other side of the line of control. There were three events that we participated in Azad Kashmir, and one was a welcome reception in Muzaffarabad, the capital, at which everybody, including the kitchen staff and the wait staff, came out and had an opinion about the future of Kashmir. The next day, there was a meeting at the University of Azad Kashmir in Muzaffarabad, at which the students came out on very short notice, hundreds of them, to hear what we Westerners had to say, and also to express their own opinions about the situation. The government and the university administration, of course, are for the referendum, and they made their points very clear. And then after that, we went to a refugee camp on the outskirts of Muzaffarabad, where people who escaped were made refugees from an uprising against Indian occupied rule. Indian rule 30 years ago were living in a refugee camp. And those people had things to say, too. So I think I went around your question a bit. But your question had to do with Canada, why Canada hasn't said anything about that. Canada has let the ball drop. The government of Canada has let the ball drop. The Canadian government has been trying to cozy up to the government in India, because they look at the government of India, look at the country of India as a vast potential market for Canadian goods and services. And so they have put aside the good work that General McNaughton and the Canadian delegation at the United Nations did in 1947, and they would prefer not to hear about that anymore. However, the interesting part about the meeting that you described in Stony Creek was that one of the speakers at the meeting was our MP from Hamilton Mountain, Scott Duvall, who is a representative of the New Democratic Party. And he got up and he made a commitment that that he would try to raise at the Human Rights Committee of Parliament the issue of Kashmir. And for his part, the president of Azad Kashmir, Mr. Khan, made a commitment that he was willing to come back to Canada in October of this year in order to appear before the Human Rights Committee of Parliament and talk about the situation in Indian-occupied Kashmir. So I'm glad to see that there's finally some movement, that there will hopefully be in the Parliament of Canada some discussion about the situation in Kashmir. In England, there is an all-party committee on Kashmir, and they talk about Kashmir all the time. Liberals, Tories, and Labour, they're always talking about Kashmir. in the British Parliament. And it's high time that we did the same here. So I think it's a good development. And the report, the context for this is the High Commissioner's report on human rights in Kashmir.
Yeah. Yeah, kudos to Scott Duvall for taking a lead in Parliament. As you say, it's just been ignored, and so to finally see an MP, and I hope he's joined by others, to get Canada to look at the situation and put pressure obviously the pressure is needed on India to allow a referendum and resolve this terrible situation once and for all. But with regard to the terrible things that have been going on during the occupation, the very recently released UN High Commission report, could you give us some of the highlights that came out of that report?
Yes, I can, actually. I've got it in front of me here on the screen. And it's a report by the High Commissioner for the Human Rights Council of the United Nations. And it's called The Report on the Situation of Human Rights in Kashmir. You can get it off the website of the High Commissioner at the United Nations. It's a 49-page report, and it, in about 45 pages of those 49 pages, the High Commissioner looks at some of the most glaring problems of the Indian occupation, and under the following subject headings, and I'll just read them off. Excessive use of force, killings perpetrated in 2018, use of pellet-firing shotguns, arbitrary arrests and detentions, including of children, torture, enforced disappearances, violations of the right to health, restrictions on the right to freedom of expression, reprisals against human rights defenders and restrictions on journalists, violations of the right to education, sexual violence, administrative detention. So, in his report, the commissioner lays out all these horrible crimes against humanity and, in fact, war crimes, crimes against the Geneva Convention, to which Canada, by the way, was a high consenting party in 1949. Canada was one of the countries that drafted the 1949 Convention on the Rights of People in Occupied Territories. So the report is the first report of its kind that the UN Security Council, the UN has released about human rights violations in Kashmir in 70 years. And I have to say that it wouldn't have happened. This report would never have been printed were it not for the efforts, the tireless efforts of Dr. Zafar Bangash, who is a Canadian imam of a mosque near Markham, Ontario, in Richmond Hill. And what Zafar did, and Zafar is not a Kashmiri, he is originally from Pakistan. What he did was, with the help of the Friends of Kashmir, which, as you know, Doug, were an integral part of the former Canadian Peace Alliance in Canada, to which the Hamilton Coalition used to belong when it was the alliance was alive. What they did was they started a petition to the High Commissioner asking him to do a report. And they were initially trying to get 15,000 signatures worldwide. They ended up getting 50,000 signatures worldwide. They wrote an appeal, a public appeal to the Commissioner, and lo and behold, he responded in a positive way. And he tried to go into Indian-occupied Kashmir, but the Indian government would not let him. He asked for permission from Azad Kashmir, from President Khan, and he got permission. But because he couldn't get into Indian-occupied Kashmir, he decided he would do a study by remotely, by taking the facts and figures that were being recorded by human rights organizations on the ground. And he compiled this into a report, and the report is absolutely damning. I don't know if you've had time to read it, Doug, but it's absolutely damning on the government of India. In the last three or four pages, the commissioner also looks at Azad Kashmir and finds a few problems, but he says there's no comparison between the catastrophic situation in Indian-occupied Kashmir as opposed to Azad Kashmir. And then the very first recommendation that the commissioner makes at the end of this report is that there be a commission of inquiry that goes into Indian-occupied Kashmir and into Azad Kashmir, a fact-finding commission, to see about the situation on the ground. And at the two talks that I was at, two welcome banquets for the president in Mississauga and Stony Creek, President Khan said that he would welcome a commission of inquiry into Azad Kashmir. But so far, the Indian government has steadfastly refused to let such a commission come into their occupation zone.
Right. Now, you mentioned actually in your talk in Stony Creek, in fact, you used a slogan, I think it was from Kashmir to Palestine,
Occupation
is a crime.
Right.
Because there seems to be some parallels, certainly in the timing and in the situation of partition and then abuse of the occupied territories. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
There is a strong parallel between the occupation of Palestine and the occupation of Kashmir. I think these may be the last couple of occupations that still exist in this world, occupations of people who've been colonialized. As you know, when the UN was formed, it was partly to decolonize those colonies that had been held in the thrall of the imperial powers, U.S., Britain, France, Spain, Italy, after the Second World War. But the people of Palestine never got to be free, and the people of Indian-occupied Kashmir never got to be free either. And instead, what has happened is that the people in both those places have become increasingly repressed and marginalized and victimized by the occupying powers. And, you know, very little has been done by the UN to rectify these situations. And a lot of resolutions have been passed at the UN about Palestine, hardly any about Kashmir, but nothing much has been done for the people of Palestine, even in all those years. And certainly very little information about Kashmir even gets out to the outside world. And we know very little about it here in Canada, and it's very similar to the situation that the knowledge about Palestine, the level of knowledge about Palestine, about 40 years ago, before the anti-war movement and the Palestine Solidarity Movement got started. In those days, you never heard about Palestine, and today, we still don't hear in the West about Kashmir. And of course, it's time that these illegal occupations were ended.
That's for sure. So, Ken, thank you very much for coming in. The first step is knowing about the situation. Kudos to you and Zafar Bangash, Phil Taylor, others working on the issue, and we'll be continuing to cover this as time goes on. So we're going to take a short break right now, but stay tuned. We have more programming coming up shortly on Unusual Sources.